Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I am Brad Rose. How's everybody doing? Had a good week? Hope so. It's been pretty good here. Actually, it's been really good here. Who am I kidding? Lots of things happening that will soon be announced and different things. couple quick things before we get into this interview with Robert Hunter, aka Missing Scenes, whose new album, Who Is This For, is out now on Varia Records. I'm a big fan of it, and I think if you're listening to this, you would probably be a fan of it too. But before we get into that, I just want to mention a few things. Over on the Jewel Garden, I may have mentioned this last week, but I can't remember. I'll mention it again. There's a new EP from Andrew Weathers called A Season in Limestone, which I'm so excited, really so excited to work with Andrew. And yeah, it's always fun finding releases that make sense as Jewel Garden releases that aren't my projects, and this one really felt right, and I was really excited that Andrew wanted to work with me on it. Also in the Jewel Garden there, if you're a subscriber, which that's only a few of you, but still, there's a new Starless Oracle release, Calypsia, that is out now too, only for subscribers. And I've been talking about this compilation for a year. A new Foxy Digitalis Jewel Garden compilation called Clarities, that's the name now. It is sort of the follow-up to The Future Disintegrates. It will be out on May 3rd. I am almost done mastering everything. It's come together really well. I fucking love compilations. So be on the lookout for that. It's kind of a fundraiser for Foxy D, and just a shitload of cool music. Okay, now, this week, Robert Hunter, Missing Scenes. I've written about and I've done podcasts about some of his previous releases. One of the things with this, I got a promo for this. I love the title. We talk about it a lot. Who is this for? It's a question I think about all of the time. And talk to people about it. Some people are probably sick of talking to me about it, but it's, I don't know. I just think it's a question that it resonated with me, and I was really intrigued to see, you know, how he was thinking about that and how that sort of became a aspect of this album in particular and these sounds. And yeah, I think it was, we had a really good conversation about it. So Who's This For by Missing Scenes. It's out now. Highly recommend it. And thanks to Robert for doing this interview. I hope you'll enjoy it. My guest today is Robert Hunter, aka Missing Scenes. He has a new record called Who Is This For out now on Varia Records on CD and digital formats. Robert, how is it going?
It's going good, Brad. Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to talk about this record. We've been emailing about it, and I've been telling you how. Well, first, I guess we'll just get into start with the title. That's where I got the concept and the title. I love that it's called Who Is This For? And can you tell a little bit, I guess, the story behind, like, the concept behind the album and the title? Sure. And all that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like yourself, making music is just something that I do. It's a lot of fun, but it's a grind, right? And every release has sort of a process that you kind of have to follow. You've got your concept and brainstorm session, which is fun, your jamming, which is really fun, listening back to your ideas, which can be,
you know, a mixed bag. Yeah.
Then developing those ideas, and then mixing, which is like probably my least favorite part, but it's the time when the music really comes into shape. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, you've already listened to this stuff more than you probably ever want to, and now you get to listen to it until you're, you know, immune to it. Yes. So then after that, you're overseeing artwork creation, creating videos, getting ready for live performances if you do that sort of thing, and then approving masters and sending it out to be pressed, and sending messages to a ton of people who ignore you because they've got tons of people emailing them about their releases that they've just spent a shitload of time on. And then you kind of have this sense of crushing sense of worthlessness, and then you start the process again because you're just
compelled to do it. I mean, it's
and so that's partially what inspired the title, Who Is This For? I just kept asking myself, I mean, it's something I've been asking myself for 20 plus years, like, who, what, why? And ultimately it's for me. It's always been for me. And I think that's true for most artists. It's for themselves. And, but you know, we like to share it with others. It's just a way for me to connect with others, in a meaningful way. And a lot of my closest friendships have been, due to music. And then, you know, the first thing I think about when I wake up, typically music, and the last thing before I fall asleep, music. You know, maybe these days it's less true. I'm thinking about what time my 2-year-old's going to wake me up in the night these days.
Very real. Yeah.
2 a.m. when you've gone to bed at 11 is not
fun. Oh my God. I've been there.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that was such a succinct explanation of the process. I really love that because it's, I think for me, like, and I'm sure you experience this, like when I'm working on something, I get kind of so, I don't really think of the whole I'm just so focused on which part of it I'm in and which, and I'm the same. Mixing is the worst. That is most of
it's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, and promoting is pretty awful too in its own way. I mean, it's just like you said, it feels like you're sending this out into the void.
For sure.
I'm always, I think it's really interesting though what you said, like how, you know, we want to share it, and it's a way you've like connected with people and met so many people that are now your friends. That was a thing that I took, I want to say I took for granted when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't release anything for, there was about a 5 or 6 year period where I was just kind of, I was making stuff, but I just kind of fell off the face of the earth. And I'd forgot how much, how important that part of it was in the process to make it, I don't want to say feel worthwhile, because in a way it's worthwhile just to do it, but, and that's a putting a weird value judgment on it, but I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just, I think that's like, to me, a big part about music and sound is this idea of like a shared experience and like bringing people together.
Well, yeah, and, especially for, you know, an artist working primarily in solitary, you know, I come out in my studio with a cup of coffee in the morning and I work on music and I'm not really getting any feedback from anyone.
Yeah.
And I do, I definitely miss that, about being, you know, in a band or whatever, like I was in my younger days. I get to do a little bit of that with Snares of Sixes and, Hollow Branches when I work with my buddy Marius, from time to time, but that's also over the internet. Like it's not in a room jamming it out. So I miss the communal aspects of music, and you know, so it does feel important for me to share out what I've done, and hopefully find someone who it resonates with.
Yeah. So like, as you've gone through this process and as you start to think of the next thing, is the idea of like Who This Is For, like, have you moved past that? Like, have you, you're kind of done? It's like, I know who this is for. I know what's.
I think what I think about more is what drives my desire to share my music. I don't really consider why I make music at this point. It's just something that I'm going to do. It's not something that I would say I have to do, because like, it always seems dramatic when people say I have to make art or I would die. But I love doing it, and I see no reason not to at least do it for myself. And really there's no better feeling for me than than just getting a cup of coffee and heading out to the studio to work each day. I love working. So
yeah. Yeah. Same. I mean, I love, yeah.
As much as like I previously said, like a kind of, when I think about the holistic picture, it can feel a little bit draining, especially
right
toward the end when you get no feedback whatsoever. So
absolutely. Yeah.
We're very lucky to have folks like yourself with Foxy and Digitalis and whatnot, like sharing our music out. So, you know.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, my favorite. I love the, because I'm the same way. Like I have a certain part of the day where I'm just making something. Like I don't even, you know, and a lot of the times I don't even know what I'm making. I'm just like, there are times where I'm like, okay, I have this specific thing I need to work on. But a lot of the times it's just like, I don't know, let's see what sounds are resonating with me in this right now and what comes out of it. And you know, a lot of times nothing does, and that's, but it's fun. Like, and yeah, I think that is a super underrated thing. It's like,
for sure,
having fun and creating moments of joy for ourselves to,
and it's always a learning process. Like every time I flip on the power switch over here and like start working with whatever I'm working with, mm-hmm, I'm inevitably going to learn something I didn't know before. So it's rewarding in that way too.
Yeah. I think that's really cool. How do you, so the like making an album, like, so the part of it with it is like sequencing and making the art and, you know, doing all those parts of it. Where does that fall in your, this is great, this is not my favorite thing, that sort of spectrum?
The creating of the music and the sequencing?
Is that, yeah, or like the art, the packaging, like, you know, that part of it.
Yeah, sure. I enjoy any portion of it that's about the creation of the final, you know, product.
Sure.
It's less about the marketing aspects of it. That's the part that I really, you know, where I really start to think like, why am I doing this? Like,
right. You know? I love making, cause I'm still, I will always be an album person. Like, and I love coming up with like a title and thinking about what the art is going to look like, that how it connects to that, or how it, you know, those, that is like, I think that's such a, for me, that's such a fun part of.
Oh, it's definitely right up there with the best parts of music creation, for sure.
Yeah.
And this time I've got to work with someone who I wanted to work with on the artwork, Dave Felton, who's done a lot of work with Kadabra Records, bigger in the horror scene. I really enjoy his work. I've got some of his original stuff hanging up downstairs, and just a wonderful, wonderful guy, wonderful artist. So, and I sent him the basic, here's the aesthetic that I'm looking for, because I was kind of like not panicking about what the artwork was going to look like for this, but I'm like, what is the overarching, what could this possibly look quite like that's not goofy? Right. Like,
right.
And I think he captured it. Like, I think he did awesome art for this. So very proud of
him. Yeah. That's, I really like the art. And I think that's always such a, like that's a really cool part of the process. I mean, a lot of my stuff I do the art for, but I always love when I get the opportunity to work with like another art, like a visual artist or a designer or whatever, and give them a little bit of direction. Just sometimes I've just handed over a thing like, here's the music, do whatever you think the vibe is, like what, like you listen to it. It's so cool to see other people interpret, you know, your own, like your work through a different medium.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing about this piece that became the cover is, you know, I sent him, here's the general aesthetic, and he actually listened to the album and created that while he was doing the artwork. Awesome. So yeah, definitely.
That's really cool. So do you have like the original piece? Like
I don't.
That's cool. No, I really, this, and this to me, this it's really interesting because this feels like, I mean, I can imagine Panic. Like, this feels like an album that's, some albums are easier to come up with like an art concept for, I think.
Yeah.
This feels like it would have been tricky.
Yeah, I think with the Moon Trilogy, you know, it was easy enough to have sort of a triptych of here's like a waning crescent, waxing crescent, full moon, with a fractal in fractal form. And that came together pretty easily. This was, you know, I wasn't coming up with anything. Lucky to have someone like Dave to kind of translate it to the visual art medium.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we've talked a little process, but I do want to ask a little bit. So you talk about you come, you know, in the morning, you get your coffee, flip on the power switch. But I'm like, so talk a little bit about your process, about like how an idea begins and kind of what kind of things inspire you in those early stages as you're, you know, just exploring sounds, jamming, kind of that part of it.
Yeah, it definitely depends on the project I'm working on at the time. I could be working in the box like I do for stuff like Snares of Sixes. But for my primary studio albums as Missing Scenes, I tend to work with hardware synth and modular synths, recorded digitally, of course, in Logic. Kind of agnostic when it comes to the analog versus digital debate. So there's going to be both types of delay, reverb, filters, etc. on any given work. And I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but sometimes I find that like the most amazing things come out of gear that I've just started learning. For example, I was developing a new patch when I received the Waldorf Quantum, and also messing around with the Wingy 2, and just stumbled on something that sounded really amazing with the feedback and resonance provided by Wingy that actually became the piece that I provided for your compilation that you've got coming.
Oh,
out.
Nice.
Field recordings tend to be done with whatever I've got on hand at the time. So sometimes I'm, you know, I hear something and I've got my iPhone out all of a sudden just trying to capture it, in, you know, notes or something.
Yep.
And if the stars align and I'm really lucky, I'll have like my Sennheiser 8060 out there and capturing better sounding field recordings.
Right. So,
and those can sometimes provide a good starting point or inspirational spark for some of the music that I do. So, for Pink Moon, Buck Moon, there's a couple of field recordings on there that I had to incorporate kind of heavily affected for some not so obvious typo negative references that I was trying to incorporate into that album. They're a big influence, or they were a big influence on my, you know, my teenage years, and they've kind of stuck with me all this time. And you know, I find my natural surroundings pretty inspiring. I live right off Vancouver Lake, and I see, you know, bald eagles flying around, hawks. There was some drama in one of the trees last night. There was a couple of crows dive bombing a hawk. there was something going down. So,
wow.
But yeah, I find my natural surroundings around here just really inspiring.
I really like what you were talking about with, you know, sometimes some of the most interesting stuff comes out of when you're figuring out a new piece of gear or something. Like one of the things that I've done for as long as I can remember is when I get a new piece of gear and I literally turn on the first, I make sure I'm recording like everything. So, I mean, I have like hours of garbage, don't get me wrong, but just in case, do you do that? Do you like kind of record everything?
It's one of those processes that I should probably have better figured out at this point, because I don't. Typically, it's like I stumble upon something while I'm kind of jamming for the first time or second time with a piece of gear, and then I'm like, okay, I should start recording, or I should develop this and then try to record. But I like the idea of like maybe having a better archive and seeing the progression of something like that. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I'm doing right now. So do you find it difficult to listen back to all of that, or do you kind of just skip around, or
I'll try to make notes. So like, I think about the time, like when this must have been 15 years ago now. It's been a while. I can't remember exactly. It was 2010-ish when I first got my Pro One. I always wanted one. There was one for sale locally that was, it was too cheap, but it was in good condition. So I was like, I've been wanting this synth for as long as I can remember, and got it home and turned it on, hit record, just because I was, part of that was like, I was just so excited. I was like, oh my God, this, I finally, get to, but as I was playing with it, I was making notes on like at the time stamp of, okay, like 35 minutes in, there was this cool thing. Like it was very basic notes, but that was so that later when I was, and it was like a couple years later, I was working on an album and I needed some texture, like some synth texture. And I was like, okay, I don't have to listen through this 3-hour thing. I've got some. And so I try to do that. I'm not always, I sometimes don't. I get either so absorbed in it or I just forget because I'm sleep deprived and life is stressful. But I try to keep, because my digital archives are a nightmare in the sense that there's so much stuff on hard drives.
Yeah.
But I do have like Excel spreadsheets for a lot of it. And there, and it could be better organized. Like a lot of it depends on memory, which is dangerous of if I'm working on a piece and I'm looking for some specific ish sound, I have to remember like, oh yeah, there was this when I was doing it with this, gear this time for like, and that's really dangerous. Like I can search through the spreadsheets, but it's not, my descriptions aren't the best of like, sounds like rumbling gravel under a bridge or something. I don't know. That's,
but hey, at least it's on spreadsheets. Like if I, when I write stuff down, I look at it later, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I wrote.
I have no idea. That's why I started using spreadsheets because I had notebooks where I was like, this is useless to me.
Even if no one gets anything out of listening to this, I've gotten something out of this, which is I should be probably using spreadsheets and always hit record when I first bring gear on.
So. You never know. And I, like one of my long-term goals is to really get this digital archive organized. Like I'm trying to start, even my like finished albums and stuff it's decently organized, but not great. And especially where it's like pre-masters versus master. And it's a nightmare. There's so much of it, but
yeah, I've lost pieces moving from computer to computer over the year where I'm like, oh my God, that was like really, really good. I'd like to listen to that now with how I think about music now and see if it actually stands up. And if it does, can I do something with it now? And I can't get into that computer anymore. Like, that computer takes 3 hours to boot up. What the fuck?
Like, yeah. Well, and my other, for about 15 years, I was using Cubase because I had a hacked version of it and that's what I had. Yeah. And then I switched and it was starting to give me problems. And so then I switched to Reaper because it was cheap and I really like it. And I've used Reaper ever since, but I've got all these Cubase files that I can't do shit with. It stresses me out sometimes. Like, and I'll see the names in folders and I'll be like, I bet that's this thing that I've been looking for and I can't.
Yeah. I used CoolInit Pro 2.0 cracked version of that. So old school.
I used CoolEdit for a long time too. That was how I, whenever I would, if I had like a 30-minute piece that I was trying to chop into tracks, I always used CoolEdit to do it.
Yeah.
Cause it was really good with the seamless transitions. I don't know. I think the thing I think about now with my archive is someday I'm not going to be here and I who knows? I hope that my archive will provide some value to my child, but I don't want them to have to deal with it, the mess that it is.
Yeah. I feel like if I had an archive like that, people would listen to it and they'd be like, thank God that guy's not around anymore.
Well, that's probably, I think I might get the same thing, but ever the optimist over here that's, 100 years from now, people are like, oh man, this guy was ahead of his time. I don't think that's the case. But dare to dream, Robert. Dare to dream. Dare to dream. Continuing on a process level, the other thing I wanted to talk about is drones, because that for this album, that's a pretty key piece of the framework. What first drew you to drones, and what is it about drone music and drones and that you are just drawn to?
Yeah, I think, drone is definitely one of the cornerstones of a lot of my music. I'm probably drawn to it for the same reason I'm drawn to something like mantra-based meditation. I kind of think of it like the silently spoken mantra that I keep returning to, even as all these other good, bad, negative, beautiful, some less so thoughts keep arising. But I think you might be surprised by some of the newer music I'm working on now. I think I'm incorporating a bit more harmonic variation and lightness in my pieces now. I haven't really changed the gear I'm using necessarily, but just how I think about things. Probably musically and personally, I would say. Yeah. So, but yeah.
That's cool. Color me intrigued. That's interesting. I always love hearing, especially knowing, I love hearing when people, it's like, I've used kind of the same tools and done this different thing with it. I always think that's really a fascinating thing to think about and listen to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay. Well, I got two more questions. These are two I always like to ask, 'cause I think they're fun. What were some of the biggest challenges to this record, making it?
Yeah.
Any part of the process?
Yeah, I think, I'm lucky to be at a place in my life right now where I can kind of see a record through from concept to, start to finish, essentially, even with no label support. So I'm thankful to say that there's not really any insurmountable difficulties with bringing this record out. But that said, I made a terrible, terrible, terrible choice early on when I was recording the title track, in that I've got my modular system and I had two outs on it and I recorded direct to Logic with that. And then I had to figure out how the fuck to mix that. And this is a 20-minute piece that's got ebbs and flows and there's a lot going on. There's more than two tracks worth of sound happening. Right. So I really had to work on EQing it and re-EQing it and then automating this portion of, that was, boneheaded and probably the biggest challenge that I had to overcome. Because I wanted to get it in the best shape possible before sending it off to be mastered. I think I touched on this earlier, but I was pretty worried about coming up with a unifying concept for the artwork. Mm-hmm. And so when I reached out to Dave Felton and told him generally the aesthetic I was looking for, he really delivered something beyond my hopes and expectations. So
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, gosh, that just thinking about and having, heard the title piece and listened to it many times, thinking that I'm stressed out just thinking about having to
I was thinking, I did this live, and it sounded good, so this shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
It was a problem. So I was wrong.
But hey, like you said, it's, you learn something new every time. So now, next time don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, did anything surprise you about making this record, doing this record?
Aside from that mixing portion,
yeah,
I was surprised at how effortlessly this whole thing came together. It was like the pieces were kind of just waiting there to be plucked out of the air and, you know, plopped down in Logic and kind of worked on from there. Otherwise, you know, it just seems like the title has sort of resonated with a few people. I didn't expect the title to kind of be quite the thing that it is, but and also just seeing how repellent it is to some other folks.
That is interesting.
But, you know, and it's not surprising to me, though, that like this would resonate with you. You're an artist. And I think that we're all a little bit more sensitive than the average bear. And we probably do think a lot about like, who is this for? Why am I doing this? And, you know, what does this matter for that? For all that?
I think about that question a lot, too. Like, why, you know, and it. And eventually get back to the point where like, A, putting these things out, sharing these things and connecting with people matters. It is, and also just putting good things into the world. Like that's, I think that's a net positive, you know?
For sure. I agree.
But it is, especially when you're in the, when you're neck deep in trying to mix a 20-minute two-track piece that should be multiple tracks, you're probably going like, why the hell am I doing this to myself?
Yeah.
Well, one last question. I'm just curious. What have you been listening to lately? Since we, you know, Foxy Digitalis is all about spreading the love. I'm just curious if there's any records recent
put me on the spot, making me feel let's see. So we were talking earlier about pronunciation and what a nightmare it can be. Stromsanger by Christina Kubic and Trondheim Voices. I've been listening to it came out on Important Records, I believe.
Yeah. I think it just came out.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Let's see. Obviously, Coil. Well, they just re-released Moon's Milk in Four Phases. I've been listening to that again. Man, what else? Been really getting into Lancome lately.
Oh, nice.
Irish, you know him, right?
Yeah.
Irish, drone folk or...
Yeah.
That's the right label for that, but...
It makes sense. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then... Otherwise, listening to Andrew Anderson, I've got a show coming up with him on April 12th. So I've been checking out his work. I wasn't really familiar with his stuff before. And
I don't think I know him. That name's new to me.
Okay. Yeah. He worked with Thor Harrison on a piece called, was it Vagrancies? No, it wasn't Vagrancies that he worked on. It was Against Permanence. And their project was called THAA. I can shoot it over to you after this.
Yeah, that sounds. I'm curious. I love Thor, so that I'm real curious. Yeah. That's cool.
So nice. That's the kind of stuff I've been into lately. So
awesome. Hey, I'm just all, you know, I'm always looking for recommendations. And see, here we go. Discover something new.
Here we go.
Exactly what I love. Well, thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And everybody listening, who is this for? Is as you're listening to this, it is out now on Barrier Records.